Ron DeSantis is all but certified now as Florida's next governor. That's after a recount showed that, yes, he did beat Andrew Gillum. But a hand recount is on in the Senate race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott, plus the state's agriculture commissioner race and the legal wrangling over these recounts in Florida. Well, it's raising new questions about how we conduct elections. Plus, the slow recovery effort in the panhandle, 1 month after Hurricane Michael. This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is on assignment this week. You can join the conversation statewide. Call us up now at 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup with your phone calls right after this news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup and happy Friday. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is on assignment this week, and Republican Ron DeSantis has defeated Democrat Andrew Gillum to become the next governor of Florida after a mandated machine recount. The win, just 0.4%. That's a spread of just over 33,000 votes. Now, DeSantis has invited Gillum to meet with him to discuss the state's future, even though Gillum still hasn't officially conceded. At the same time, there's a hand recount going on right now across the state in that razor-close Senate race between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson. And there's a hand recount in the race for agriculture commissioner as well. The hand recount across all 67 Florida counties focuses exclusively on tens of thousands of possible undervotes. That's where the voter appears to have not voted for a candidate. And overvotes. That's where the voter seems to have voted for more than one candidate. Now, yesterday, several counties were unable to complete their machine recounts by a 3 p.m. deadline, including Palm Beach and Broward counties. Here's Broward Supervisor of Elections Brenda Snipes.
Our completion was 3:02, and it should have been 3 o'clock. So I think the staff worked extremely hard to accomplish what we have accomplished in a very tight timeline. Some of the laws are lagging behind some of the procedures that we need to put in place to make this work.
Snipes has come under heavy criticism for the way she's handled the recount in Broward, but what about her question? Are the laws lagging behind the procedures when it comes to recounting all of the votes? Here we go again with the Florida recount coverage and with their insights into all of this. We welcome Ian Sancho. He's a retired Leon County Supervisor of Elections joining us from WFSU in Tallahassee. Ian, good to be with you.
Good to be with you, Melissa.
Charles Zeldin, political science professor at Nova Southeastern University in Florida and an election expert. He joins us via Skype. Charles, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
And John Mills, former Speaker of the Florida House and Dean Emeritus, Professor of Law and Director of the Center for Governmental Responsibility at University of Florida's Levin College of Law. John joining us from WGCU in Fort Myers. John Mills, a pleasure to have you as well.
Thank you very much.
And what are your thoughts and questions about the recounts in Florida as we talk about this right now? Give us a call from anywhere in the state at 305-995-1800. That's 305-995-1800. Or you can just tweet us at Florida Roundup. Ian Sancho, let's begin with you. We have resolution in the governor's race. Ron DeSantis will be our next governor. And as we watch the hand recount proceed now in the Senate race between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson and the agriculture commissioner race between Nikki Fried and Matt Caldwell, it was extraordinary yesterday to witness Broward and Palm Beach counties and some other counties miss the deadline for these state-mandated automatic machine recounts by just a few minutes. So as we watch the counties now go through this difficult task of doing a manual recount, where do conversations stand, do you think, on expanding the timeline for these machine recounts and these automatic and hand recounts? As you watch this play out as a former supervisor of elections, what's going through your mind about how we could have done this better?
Well, one of the things that the listeners have to understand is that Florida rewrote their rules after the 2000 election. Those rules were written completely by a Republican legislature led by a Republican governor. And some of the things that they specifically wanted to do was ensure finality over accuracy. That was a policy decision made in 2000. For example, they took away the discretion that the Secretary of State had in 2000 to determine whether or not there were reasons why a jurisdiction was late. The Secretary of State no longer has that jurisdiction based on the rules that were passed in 2002. And we've not done anything since 2002 to recognize that the number of ballots that we were dealing with in 2000 has exploded. The number one problem that the supervisor of elections are having are processing these mail ballots, which in 2000 were less than a million votes. Today, that number is approaching 2.5 million votes cast in mail-in ballots, and the deadlines are identical. And this is insane. I can tell you, for example, that they're still processing mail-in ballots in almost all of the states that utilize mail-in ballots. In fact, the deadlines for voters to even cure those problematic ballots. In Washington, you have 21 days after the election to cure your ballots to make sure they count. In Oregon, 14 days. In California, 18 days. Our deadline was the day before the election, making our law that the supervisor of elections must contact a mail-in voter if they have a problem ludicrous. You can only do that for the rural jurisdictions, and you can't do that in the urban jurisdictions, particularly for mail ballots delivered on election day. One of the findings that the judge threw out the current law is unconstitutional as an equal protection violation and said, excuse me, the people who vote on election day have the same right to have their mail-in ballots cured as those who did it the previous week. So we have lots of issues we have to deal with, and the timelines are just one of those.
It's 305-995-1800. We'll go to your calls in just a moment here on the Florida Roundup. John Mills, former Speaker of the Florida House. You're also with UF's Levin College of Law. What about Ian Sancho's point there that this massive flood of mail-in ballots has come in around the state and counties are struggling to process this? We've had quite a bit of time to improve our election system in Florida since 2000. You've written extensively about this, both the logistical issues and the legal issues. As you look back and then as you look at where we are today, how concerned are you about the position that Florida once again finds itself in?
First, I would say we are better off than we were in 2000, that there are actual standards and timeframes for recount. It's not optional. We're going to get a full mechanical recount, a full hand recount. The issue of the adequacy of the timeframes, given the number of votes, is something that remains in dispute at court. And Ian knows that very well. And one of the issues is, at this point, we'll be hand counting, as you said, looking at overvotes and undervotes, and people have to make judgments: who are the counters and who are the boards that are reviewing this. And this is going to be a tight time frame. We have until Sunday, and latest I saw was around 56,000 votes for a hand recount. So I think we're better off than we were before, but this is 2018. It's a much larger state. The machines seem to be inadequate to handle the votes in this period of time. And we definitely need to reexamine where we are.
Charles Zeldin, what about that? Counties, particularly Palm Beach County, had issues with their machines. Do you see a push following at the end of this process maybe to standardize our elections technology and our protocols across the state? Because we're seeing these big variations county by county. What are your thoughts about that as someone who really studies how states conduct elections?
Well, historically, Florida has always had a very decentralized electoral vote counting process. Power is in the hands of the individual counties and their supervisors of elections. They designed the ballot. They bought the equipment. They they organized how they would count things. And that really blew up in our faces in 2000. There was some effort to create uniformity in terms of deadlines, in terms of definitions of when you have a recount and what have you. But we still basically leave things in the hands of the individual counties. And unfortunately, in many cases, it's up to the counties to pay for the equipment. And a lot of counties don't have the budget or don't want to put the budget into acquiring the most recent equipment. And as has been mentioned, every election cycle, we have more people voting, and we have more people voting in ways that are time-consuming. Absentee ballots, provisional ballots require more than just running it through a machine. They have to be looked at, they have to be checked, they have to be determined if they are a valid ballot or not, and then they can be counted. And so, yes, it would be a good idea if the state did at least make the process by which we count the votes uniform. And we do need to relook at the timeline. The big lesson from 2000 was that we didn't just have a problem of broken voting machines, though they were broken and they were a problem, but rather the entire system itself was broken. It was not capable of handling a very close election. And here we are 18 years later, we have three very close elections. And while things are better than they were in 2000, once again, the system is falling apart. It's breaking down under the pressure of having to count every single vote. And until we provide enough resources to see that never happened, you know, that is something we can do uniformly, we will still be the Florida of Florida when it comes to voting.
We'll continue to see these issues. And if you're just tuning in, here in the Florida Roundup, we're taking your calls from all over the state as a hand recount is happening in all 67 Florida counties right now. There is still not a winner in the U.S. Senate race between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson. There's a hand recount going on as well in the Agriculture Commissioner race between Nikki Fried and Matt Caldwell. Very thin margins separating both of these, all four of these candidates, rather, and lots of calls from all over Florida. Let's go to some of them. Rachel is in Boynton. Hey, Rachel, you're on the air. How are you today?
Thanks for taking my call. I live in Palm Beach County, and I vote by mail, and I'm beginning to think that that's like throwing my vote in the garbage. When do they count the by mail vote? And can anyone just say, oh, I don't like this signature, and I don't like the way she votes, maybe, and throw it away and say it's no good? And I'll listen to your answer.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. Ian Sancho, let's go to you as a retired supervisor of elections. Floridians have really been encouraged to vote by mail in recent years, but this time around, we're seeing the problems that can come along with that and this sense by many voters that that it's not going to be properly tabulated. And there's also the issue over whether signatures match, and we're seeing how many ballots have been thrown out because of that and the attending lawsuits around that. And so what would you say to a voter like Rachel who feels that the mail-in ballot was a waste of her time?
Well, Florida law allows requires, for example, that the supervisor of elections actually tell the voter, this woman could have called before the election or not on election day because she probably could not have gotten through to Palm Beach elections office phones. But we keep a list of everyone whose ballot has counted. Sharp citizens can call the office and ask, was my mail-in ballot counted or is it a problem? If it's a problem, and it's before the election, you can cure it. But mail-in ballots, for example, in Leon County, I've disfavored them. We've pushed in-person early voting, which has about a 99.9% count rate, about the equivalent of voting in the precinct, as opposed to voting by mail, because it became apparent to us in Leon County that there were additional problems with mail-in ballots that meant that, quite frankly, a lower percentage of votes cast by mail-in ballot will be tabulated in the state of Florida. That's a fact. And so for the parties to push voting by mail as a way to get their votes in, they're actually, in my opinion, deserving the citizen. early voting, which expanded and became mandatory after 2002, is this two-week period before the election where you can go to a location and cast that vote anywhere in the county. You don't have to go to a particular location. If you're a voter, you're in Palm Beach County, during that two-week period, go to an early voting location. The vote is tabulated instantly when you do that. It is not held. The identification is checked when a person goes to vote, just as you are asked for the required identification when you vote on election day in a voting location. And so, again, people need to be aware that there are problems with vote by mail, and these deadlines exacerbate that at a tremendous level. I'm not in favor of voting by mail.
You're clearly not in favor of it.
Not at all.
It's interesting to get your insights as someone who ran a county election process for so many years, and calls coming in from all over the state, South Florida, Central Florida, the West Coast of Florida. Let's go to Paul in Gainesville now. Hi, Paul. How are you? You're on the radio.
Hi, I'm doing well, thank you, and thanks for taking the call, and thank you to your guests. I wanted to raise a couple points, please. One was I've heard repeated claims in the news that a lot of the difficulty in Palm Beach County came because the machines were antiquated. And if my information is correct, you know, it's the fifth richest county in the state, so clearly it seems to be a function of either priorities or incompetence. And on the point of incompetence, there was another question, if it could be addressed. Don't both campaigns have to sign off on the ballots on a county-by-county basis? If I was running, I think
you mean the ballot design, how the ballots are designed, Paul? Right. Yeah.
Right.
I appreciate that question, because there's been a lawsuit and a lot of discussion about the ballot design in Broward County. Charles Zeldin, our election expert, quickly before the break, Bill Nelson is alleging that he got too many undervotes in Broward because of the ballot design. And so what about that? That's really up to the supervisor in that county, isn't it? And what about the question regarding Palm Beach's machines? They're outmoded machines.
Yes, the ballot design is done by the individual county supervisors, and they put together the ballot. For one thing, every county has different ballots because you have not only different races that are going on in the counties, but you also have different constitutional amendments, and especially countywide amendments that need to be voted on. And I suspect that the decision to place the Senate race where they did in Broward County was in an effort to try and limit the page numbers of the ballot. As it was a 5-page ballot, double-sided. It was a very long ballot. And you know, these choices are often done with the best of intentions, but often causing problems once the voting process begins. As for the machines, do keep in mind that what is an inadequate, antiquated machine for Palm Beach County, where there are almost, 500,000 to 600,000 votes being counted, would not be an adequate machine in another county where they're only voting 100,000 votes. Part of the problem here is that yes, these are wealthy counties. They're also very large counties in which hundreds of thousands of people vote. The 800,000 people who voted in Broward County are equal to the total population, give or take a few, of the entire state of Wyoming.
Exactly.
And so what is adequate in a rural county, what is adequate in a smaller county or a suburban county in Florida may not be adequate when you're talking in South Florida. So it's not necessarily incompetence. It's not realizing the numbers that are coming in. And remember, those machines held up for the initial count. It was the recount
did, but
that
not,
caused
but
the
But not the recount. Exactly right. And there's so much more still to discuss as a hand recount is happening across the state right now. Lots of callers waiting on hold to discuss it. as we continue with our election experts here on the Florida Roundup, coming to you statewide from Florida Public Radio. More about the recount and also an update on the Florida Panhandle after Hurricane Michael. And your calls right after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. And as we continue talking about the Florida recounts, the hand recounts that are actually happening right now in the Senate race between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson, and in the Agriculture Commissioner race between Nikki Fried and Matt Caldwell, those races still too close to call. Although we do have a new governor officially now in the state, he's all but certified, Ron DeSantis, the Republican, beating the Democrat Andrew Gillum. Lots of calls, lots of questions still about how this recount is being conducted, and we're going to try to get as many of you on the air as possible as we continue with our panel of experts, all election experts here on Florida recounts, unfortunately, because they've been through it before. Let's go quickly to Jeanette in Pasco County. Hey, Jeanette, how are you? Go ahead. Hey, Jeanette, are you with us? Okay, let's try another caller. It's Judith in Fort Pierce. Hi, Judith, how are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm pretty
Hello.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Jeanette.
Oh, we do have Jeanette. Jeanette, please go ahead.
Yes, I had two things. One is I do a mail-in ballot, and on my ballot, it was very clear on the envelope that you could call and find out the status of your mail-in once you mailed it. So that way, if there were any concerns as a voter, you could take responsibility and get it right. The other thing was it was very clear that if you decided that you made a wrong move with the pencil on the ballot itself, that you should not cross it out and you should not mark anything extra. You should actually get a new ballot. So my real big concern is, how is it that we're actually addressing undervotes and overvotes? Why are we even doing that? It was clear on the mail-in ballot. It's clear when you go to the voting polls. You get a new ballot if you make a mistake. Why is someone else, other than the voter, making it clear as to what their intentions were? Why is there an outside person making this judgment call?
Yeah, thanks for that, Jeanette. John Mills, Dean Emeritus, Professor of Law with UF's Levin College of Law, former Speaker of the Florida House. You know, as we hear Jeanette in Pasco County expressing her frustration, I think a lot of voters around the state are having similar thoughts and conversations. We're really getting a deep dive into how these ballots are tabulated and counted, mistakes that can be made with the ballots. But it's only when the elections are so close that this even becomes an issue. And so let's talk a little bit about some of these problems and also the legal actions that we're going to see continue in the wake of this phenomenon here in Florida. A number of lawsuits facing the supervisors of elections, particularly down in Broward County. As someone who knows a lot about the law, what do you think will be the outcome of this whole debacle, particularly in how we hopefully better revise our processes for 2020 and beyond? Can you share your thoughts a little bit about that?
First, the caller that asked about the mail-in ballot and the signature verification, it's worth knowing that since a judge has ordered that those verifications will remain open until tomorrow afternoon at 5, you can check. So I think anyone who is in doubt in the state should call. It's the signature verification problem was pointed out, among other things, former Congressman Patrick Murphy said his ballot was found invalid because his signature didn't match.
Right.
So there are significant problems in that area. I agree with Ian.
And do you see the signature match law eventually, I don't know, going the way of the hanging chad in this state? How do you see the future of that whole provision?
The problem is if you're going to have mail-in, there has to be a means of verification. So either it's a signature or something else and a process for verifying it. And As long as we have mail-in, we're going to have verification. In terms of the recount, that's really the manual recount. It's really important because humans have to have standards because we are fallible. So the question is, what is the intent of the voter? So the question that the caller said was, why should people try if they, well, messed up the test, if they put a an ink mark somewhere? Because the commitment of the state and the democracy is to try to make votes count. So it is up to that the counting group and the canvassing board to look at a ballot. No longer are we looking at hanging chads. We're looking at the same type of ballot. Did someone clearly express their intent by marking in a bubble for a candidate, and there just may have been an ink mark that may have thrown that ballot out because it was identified by the machine as being a potential overvote or undervote. So someone has to look at it.
I think we have an observer of the vote count on the line now. It's Jackie down in Key Biscayne. Hey, Jackie.
Hi.
How are you? Are you an observer at a polling place?
Yes, I just left the Doral office, the Miami-Dade County elections. I was on the Nelson shift as a Democrat. My shift was from 8 to 12, but we finished early by 10:30. And so my feedback would be a lot of undervoting. Clearly, it seems to me people went in with a strong intent to vote for governor, perhaps, and then just skipped the first part. So most of what I saw was a lot of undervoting.
Yeah, and that's confirming other anecdotal reports that we're hearing about this. Thanks for that call, Jackie. Ian Sancho, for Bill Nelson, although certainly he's mounted a robust legal effort, if a vote was never cast, it can't be counted, right? I mean, you could look at a ballot and say, well, maybe the voter wanted to vote for Bill Nelson, but there's no way to prove that.
No, you have to have made a mark on that ballot that can be discerned either by the machine or by a counting team afterwards. And I will tell you that Florida does have excellent optical scan ballot standards. I would put it up against any state in the nation. We have excellent rules that was done by the supervisor of elections and elections experts working together. And so the standards that we're looking at, paper ballots in all 67 counties the same. The standard's not the problem. The problem is technology. And I can tell you in Palm Beach, for example, the equipment there has been certified by the state of Florida to be used in all Florida elections. So the state of Florida is on the hook for certifying a system that went out of business over a decade ago that cannot do multiple recounts on one pass through. And so it's not just Palm Beach's problem. Why did the state of Florida certify Palm Beach's counting devices, including their high-speed tabulators, if they couldn't do the work? So this whole process of the state certifying equipment that you can only use makes them partly responsible when the equipment they have certified actually doesn't work well.
Lots of calls on the Florida recount, or the Florida roundup, that is. This week we could call the show that. It's 305-995-1800. Patrick is in Jacksonville. Hey, Patrick, you're on the radio across the state. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say what really bothers me in this whole process debacle are the seemingly arbitrary deadlines. Counties can't even make the deadlines for the recount. The purpose of a recount is to make sure every vote is counted correctly, and they're not giving counties enough time. And we still have absentee ballots coming in. People are allowed to come in and present information proving the legitimacy of their ballot. We still have overseas ballots coming in. Like, why don't we give counties enough time to count the votes? That's the purpose of a recount. Make sure every vote is counted properly.
Sure. Well, that Charles Zeldin. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that was a decision made by the Florida legislature in 2002. They made these time deadlines. And I will tell you, they did not ask the supervisor of elections in 2002 if these deadlines were proper. They arbitrarily created these deadlines based on their decision that they wanted finality. They did not like the 37-day process, and so they put in very strict deadlines to ensure that the process would end. And that, quite frankly, is not serving the citizens of this state or this nation very well at this point.
And we're seeing this play out in other states. Let's be clear, not just Florida. Charles Zeldin, how does Florida compare with other states in terms of these hard and fast deadlines? I mean, for example, in Arizona, there was a very close Senate race that just got called. I've seen a number of other down ballot races around the country that are just now being called. It shows how divided America is politically right now, but it also shows that, as the caller said, it's not necessarily a good idea for media outlets and campaigns to call the winners on election night, because you don't always know the answer. You need to let the votes and the process play out.
Well, and that's true. The thing to keep in mind is that most elections are not close. Most elections, there's a close election is 1-1.5% gap. Well, 1.5% gap, usually, if that's where you are on election night, the votes that'll come in afterwards, that'll be counted afterwards, aren't going to make up the difference. Look what we saw with the governor's race. There was a 0.5% difference. It was 40,000 votes roughly. The odds of a machine recount changing that are small. So calling the vote on election night when the gaps are, say, a percent or more, is usually a safe proposition, because the odds of the votes that come in later changing it are small. But when the vote is close, when the gaps are lower than 0.5% or even 0.25%, then the calls we make election night are problematical, because it gives a sense that we know what's happened, but we haven't counted every vote. So, yes, it would be nice if people didn't call the election the night of. But then again, in most cases, when we do, it's accurate. It's only when it's close. The system mm-hmm. that we have works so long as the vote isn't close. The prayer of every supervisor of election is, please, Lord, let this not be a close vote. Because when it gets really close and we have to count every single vote, the system breaks down. And in Florida, where we wanted conclusions rather than accuracy, mostly because we were embarrassed by what happened in 2000, and partly because the Republicans who were making this choice benefit from certainty over accuracy, we put ourselves in this unwinnable situation.
And here we are, as you've noted, the system has not worked well when it's this close. And the spotlight is global as we talk about this, Florida being in this unwelcome spotlight once again. As we talk about the Florida recounts, the hand recounts are happening right now, by the way. In the Senate race and the Agriculture Commissioner race, if you're just tuning in, there is finality in the governor's race. However, you're listening to the Florida Roundup. We are statewide now in Jacksonville, South Florida, Orlando, Tampa, Gainesville, taking calls from all over about this recount, coming to you from Florida Public Radio. Okay, let's go to Mario in Orlando. He's got a question about voting technology. Hey, Mario, you're on the air. Go ahead. Oh, we lost Mario. Lots of other calls, though. How about Patrick from Tampa? Hi, Patrick. Thanks for holding. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no problem. So I feel like we hear about these problems every election, and I'm wondering, in this day and age when you can get approved for a mortgage, you know, you can do so many things online, you can verify your identity for any of these services, and I just don't hear any talk about, you know, making voting a lot more easy where you can do it on your phone and just clear up some of these problems and also increase voter turnout.
Sure, sure. Thanks for that, Patrick. Let me ask both John Mills and Ian Sancho about that. Other states are experimenting with new technologies. They're also doing same-day registration, ranked choice voting, which is something that's been added to the process. But what about Patrick's question that it's too cumbersome a process to register and vote, and that we could streamline it technologically? Ian and then John, I'd love to get both of your thoughts quickly.
No, 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 internet voting. It is the most insecure, non-auditable. It's mind-blowing. Yes, convenience might be there, but I have malware on my phone that I could never get rid of, and it's an iPhone. And if you allow anyone to connect a counting tabulator to the internet, I would gladly show you 1,000 security experts that have said you have just destroyed the validity of your election. You can't audit over the internet, which is why the state of Florida, after Congressional District 13 race in 2006, yeah, banned voting
and
technology.
I can hear how strongly you feel about it, Ian, as a former official. And John Mills, let's close with you. Your final thoughts as we wait for the hand recounts to proceed.
First, I would agree that if you have something that voting by internet or touchscreen, the new world, there are a lot of hacks. Imagine how difficult it would be to verify. And what we ought to do is make registration much easier, make voting early or on election day easier by having more available capacity for people to vote, and anticipate that Florida is a state where there will be close elections and large numbers. The combination of a close election and large numbers gets us exactly where we are, which is into a situation where it's hard to assure that we are completely accurate because the numbers are large and it's important because it's close. So we ought to come up with ways in a very focused and policy-oriented way to increase registration and increase the capacity for people to vote who want to vote.
Yeah, maybe even have Election Day make it a holiday or have it on a weekend so that more people can participate in the process. I know that's come up a lot.
Let me just say I agree wholeheartedly with what's just been said. There are ways to make voting easier and more effective, but that still make it safe, and that should be the goal. A safe vote that we can audit. But at the same time, let's make it easier for people to participate in the voting process.
Absolutely. I think we can all agree on that. And it's wonderful to get your insights. Thanks so much to all three of you. Ian Sancho, the retired Leon County Supervisor of Elections. Charles Zeldin with Nova Southeastern, an election expert. John Mills, former Speaker of the Florida House and Dean Emeritus, and also with UF's Levin College of Law. Thanks, gentlemen, very much for being with us. We appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you.
And in a moment, a trip up to Florida's Panhandle, where 5 weeks after Hurricane Michael, people are still living in tents and seeking assistance. That's next here on the Florida Roundup. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is on assignment this week. And, you know, more than a month after Hurricane Michael blew through the region, Florida's Panhandle is still struggling to recover from the devastation caused by that storm. Families in the Panhandle, they're still sleeping in tents 5 weeks after Michael. And while more than 95,000 people in the disaster zone have asked FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, for some help, well, so far, just over 25,000 in that area of the state have been approved for housing assistance. We've got some important updates from the Panhandle 5 weeks after Michael as we welcome Jessica Foster. She's with WJHG News, the NBC affiliate in Panama City Beach. Jessica, so good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And of course, Michael just devastated the Panhandle, nearly 30 people dead, thousands of homes and businesses destroyed. And we've been hearing consistently that recovery has been very slow. Bring us up to date on where things stand in those communities and where the biggest problems are, if you could.
Well, first of all, this storm was beyond really anything that we could have imagined. The destruction, I tell people that pictures don't do it justice. Until you are here on the ground and seeing the devastation, it's hard to put it into words. And we are seeing a very resilient spirit from the people of the Panhandle, but because we had such massive destruction, it is going to take a while. We did get word that there are 2,500 FEMA trailers now staged at the airport in Marianna, which is in Jackson County. And there are about 22 sites that FEMA has now identified where they can place these trailers. And they are set to begin distributing trailers on November 18th. And that is...
Well, that's good news, sure.
That is. It's great news because that's one of the biggest problems that we have is the housing, because so much of our housing was demolished that people just don't have anywhere to go.
And do you know how many people roughly might still be sleeping in tents or without shelter? There's a cold front coming through as well. What's the status for people without housing? How many people are we talking about?
Well, it's really hard to say because some people are actually still living in their homes, even though the conditions are substandard. So a lot of people are just afraid to leave their homes. And they're like, we're going to stay here. We don't want anyone to loot. So we're just going to stay in our home. And then we also have a shelter set up at one of our high schools, at Arnold High School. That shelter, there's plenty of room in that shelter for people to go. But the issue there is that it's in Panama City Beach. The hardest hit areas are in Panama City and to the east of that. So the logistics of getting to that shelter, that's difficult for people. We've had reports that there are dozens of people camped out in one church parking lot.
So people just doing whatever they can. Now you mentioned school. Are students back in school? How are the school districts managing that?
So students are back in school. The last school actually started back earlier this week. So they kind of did a phased approach for getting the kids back to class. 20 out of 35 schools in Bay District were heavily damaged. And so they're having to double up. The middle school and high school are having to go to school together and being housed in different locations. So they're doing split schedules.
Wow. So everyone, it sounds like people, folks in that part of the state are just plowing ahead, doing the best they can. What would you say the biggest need in the region is right now? It's good to hear that FEMA's on the ground, but what else is the big issue that you're seeing in addition to the lack of housing?
In addition to the lack of housing, I would say just having the support. I know that we're going to end up having a lot of people needing emotional support, mental health services. You know, our hospitals were damaged to the point where the only thing that was open was the emergency room, and they were having to transport patients outside of the area. One of our hospitals, Gulf Coast Regional Medical Center, did open back up this past week, but that's still limited. They're still doing that in a phased approach. So our medical services are fairly limited right now, and people have been through such a traumatic experience. Even children in the area have been through a traumatic experience. And so I know that we're going to have those mental health needs in the future.
Yeah, that is something that doesn't get as much attention, Jessica, but it really should, just the trauma of living through this experience. And I would think, too, driving around that area, if you live there, seeing the devastation of where your town, where your community used to be, how much debris, how much other damage is still not cleaned up where you're sitting in Florida?
You know, I was on the ground from the very beginning. So as soon as the storm passed here at the TV station, we were out and about assessing things. And I remember seeing that, and it looked like a war zone. And if you still go into areas, it still looks like a war zone, but it looks massively improved to what I saw initially when I was on the ground. So there is still debris everywhere. There are homes, blue tarps everywhere that you can see when you go into Panama City and eastward. there's a very big divide on the type of damage that we saw over what we call the Hathaway Bridge. So people that are familiar with this area, we have Panama City Beach, which is the big tourist destination, and then the Hathaway Bridge connects Panama City Beach to Panama City. And Panama City Beach is up and running, and many parts of that area look like nothing happened. It's just a very stark contrast.
Wow, that's got to be amazing to see and witness. And we're talking right now about the aftermath of Hurricane Michael in the Panhandle here on the Florida Roundup, as we get an eyewitness account from Jessica Foster, who's been covering this from WJHG News, the NBC affiliate in Panama City Beach, here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Okay, let me ask you as well, Jessica, we're talking about more than 200,000 voters in the counties that were hardest hit by the storm. We were talking earlier in the hour about the hand recounts taking place around Florida. Election supervisors in both Bay and Gulf counties did open a handful of super voting sites in the Panhandle. Any sense of what the turnout was on Election Day? Did people still try to get out to vote?
They did. We actually had a great voter turnout. And I think that people were energized because they knew that we were going to need assistance and that recovery was going to take a long time. And so they wanted their voices to be heard. And that's what we kept hearing our citizens saying. And I know that my husband and I actually was sick the day, election day, and I still got out of bed and went and stood in that long line to vote because I knew that it was important.
You made it out to vote.
Yes.
Now, before we let you go, are you hearing any, you know, anecdotal reports of people in the Panhandle saying, you know, I'm just going to leave Florida in the wake of this? It's just too devastated here. We saw that after Hurricane Katrina, a lot of people from New Orleans came over to this part of the country. People have left Houston after a devastating storm there. Any talk of that in the Panhandle?
There is some talk of that in the Panhandle. What we do have here, we have a lot of people that were born and raised here, and they feel that their roots are really ingrained in the Panhandle. And so you have people like that who are not going to leave. We also have a lot of military families. And with the devastation of Tyndall Air Force Base, a lot of them have been reassigned. So we see some of that, people leaving because of it. And then some other people are just like, you know, this is not for me. I can't go through another hurricane season. And the job, that's an issue. With some businesses not being able to reopen right now or the housing shortage, people can't find work. And so they're going to go where they can find work.
Sure. And I would imagine that more than anything could be driving some departures. And how about you? How are you holding up as someone who's been through this whole experience?
You know, it was very emotional, especially because I love where I live and I love where I work and my family's here and I'm a mother. And the school impact really resonated with me. So it has been emotional and difficult, and I had repairs that had to be done to my own home. But I also know that this is what we're here for. This is what we do as journalists, is to get those stories out there and make sure that our citizens' voices are heard. And so I feel a sense of duty as well.
Sure. And documenting it, getting the information out to the state, the country, even the world, it is so important. And so I know you're getting ready to go back to work. So we really appreciate you jumping on the line with us, letting everyone around Florida hear how things are in the Panhandle. Jessica, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. And we just want to tell everybody, please don't forget the Panhandle. There's still a long, long road to recovery.
That's right. And thank you for that message. That's Jessica Foster. She's with WJHG News. That is the NBC affiliate in Panama City Beach. Now, you might have been listening to Jessica and thinking, how can I help? How can we continue to help the Panhandle recover? Because, of course, right after the storm hit, there was this big rush of attention, caravans going to that part of the state. But as time has moved on, it has not been at the forefront of people's minds. So it's important to keep that thought and keep your sentiment to help the Panhandle at the top of your agenda. Here's how you can help. You can donate to the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, Catholic Charities. You can go to Volunteer Florida's website. There's also the Junior League of Panama City. They are running a diaper bank. There's even a Diapers for Babies Hurricane Fund you can Google, and also Feeding Florida. Those are just some of the organizations that are active right now in the Panhandle, and they all need your financial support and any other support you can provide. So I would consider a donation to one of those fine groups. And that is our show for today. Thanks so much for listening. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Our producer is Bridget O'Brien. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and Technical Director. Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz, and theme music by Aaron Libos. Tom will be back next week. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.